Welcome back to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I'm J.L. Covan here in the Covan Studios. Cookie, my dog, is right outside the door. I can hear her rustling about. She's confused as to why she's not allowed in here. And I've said, I'm a grown man doing a podcast in a home office. I don't care how routine or normal this may seem in our time. I'm ashamed. I'm deeply ashamed of what my life has become. So, Cookie, Bear, Covan, I don't want you to see. This is like in the Florida Project. Spoiler for a movie from 2017. But this is me turning tricks and me putting hip-hop music on for Cookie and being like, just hang out here while mommy does Florida things with a gentleman caller, though he's hardly a gentleman. JL, why are you referencing such weird, obscure movies? I don't get what you're talking about. Well, it was in the top, 50 of the New York Times top 100 movies of the 21st century, I believe. So it's not that obscure. By the way, I saw 81 of those 100 movies. I thought that was a pretty good number. And I was disappointed in a few that I hadn't watched. But 81 out of 100 is pretty good. My listeners, I think, have seen, it would feel like my listeners have seen somehow negative amounts of movies on that list based on how confused they always seem by my references. But we're happy to be here. We're on a little bit of a time crunch. Why, JL? Do you have a life? Do you have things you need to do? Do you have gigs? No to all of the above. But I turn on the air conditioning in the studio, cool off the room. We're in the midst of what can only be described as the opening salvo of Mother Nature roasting humanity to death thanks to our climate inaction and fossil fuel addiction. But for sound purposes, I turn off the air conditioning. So it immediately starts the clock. By the end of this episode, I should look like James Brown at the end of a concert or Patrick Ewing at the foul line. JL, I don't know either of those references. Well, then you got to stop listening to me. I agree. Let's just mutually agree that you don't know anything. I know some stuff and that it'll never work between us. Last week's episode with Brian Goldstone, I got great reaction from the people who did listen and watch. Sadly, there was like a 33% drop off from week one to week two. So thanks everybody who couldn't wait for me to come back and love the format of me interviewing guests and think that my voice is needed and are such huge fans of mine. It's always good to see that correlate into a 33% drop in actual participation from fans. I feel like my fans seem to like me in some sort of theoretical space that doesn't exist in ticket sales, views, listens, attendance at live shows. But that's okay. Maybe my comedy is like, it's like a crypto thing or something. It's like you don't support what I do, but I get NFTs. Maybe there's like an account somewhere where all my fans have been piling NFTs. And I'm rich in the crypto space, maybe. Who knows? The blockchain. Somewhere in the blockchain, I am the Dave Chappelle of some comedy corner of the weird internet. But anyway, guys, let's not complain. Let's be thankful for the blessings we have. Laura's been away for a few days already on a trip with her family, and Cookie just ended a 56-hour hunger strike. Oh, my upstairs neighbors are making noise. Always love that. Guess I'm going to have to Karen to the landlord again, which is one of the problems. When you're a 6'7" guy with angry eyebrows, you can't just go knocking up on the door upstairs and go, hey, everybody, I don't know how to play this. Should I be relaxed and give you like a creepy vibe, like I'm calm until I'm not? Or should I come up there looking like a stern, angry guy and lay down the law? I know what I'll do. Nothing. I'll avoid conflict. Write to the landlord. They'll send you some email that's vaguely reprimanding. You'll change nothing in your behavior. My rent will go up, and I'll go, what the fuck am I doing here? So, and by the way, no guest this week. Big guest next week. That's all I'll say. And don't bother me trying to find out who it is. Just put it this way. Most of you will be disappointed. That's just the way it is. You have in your mind, is he going to interview Barack Obama next week? Yeah, I'm going to interview Barack Obama next week. Now, I guess it's a disappointment, right? It's like when I ask, I remember saying to my girlfriend during the salad days of my comedy career, not the salad days now where I have to eat salad because I'm going to die if I don't stop consuming sugar and rage, but the 2020, 2021, 2022 period where I was really killing it. And I said, guess how much money I made this month on Cameo? And I'm just going to tell you right now, I made a ton. She guessed like four times that amount, or it might have been my nephew where I said, guess how much I made. And he guessed like eight times what I made. And I was just like, oh, story ruined now. Because it's like, guess how many home runs Aaron Judge hit this year? 205. No, he hit 62, which was a record. But I guess that seems shitty now compared to your initial guess of 205. That's the kind of support I get. It's like, we all know I'm not successful, but if you could at least, when you're guessing about my wildest dreams, keep them somewhere within reality, and then you'll be impressed when I tell you, instead of like, how much did you make this year? Did you make $1 million on Cameo? No. No, I didn't make $1 million on Cameo, but I made a lot. Jesus Christ. Anyway, it's going to be one of those weeks, folks, and some of you are sitting there going, this is like a righteous prick episode. I'm loving it. And others of you are writing in the comments, I do know a good therapist, JL. Would you like to maybe see one? And some of you are going, what's Righteous Prick? And I go, that was my podcast for over a decade. But don't worry about it. You're big fans. I saw F1. And oh, by the way, just to update you on my latest. So now that they're apparently playing 2-on-2 basketball in the small bedroom above me, I don't know what's going on. Cookie is getting disturbed, so I hear her shuffling outside. She'll probably start barking soon or pissing herself. So what I do to appease 600 to 1,100 of you each week is really just not worth the sacrifice. But I saw F1 with Brad Pitt. Enjoyed it. Like those big screen movies, you know, Brad Pitt. But it's a little disappointing because it made a lot of money, but it's not going to be like a gigantic hit, I don't think. It's going to be like a modest hit. And it's sort of like, yeah, we threw Brad Pitt, megastar, Damson Idris, star of Snowfall, Javier Bardem, a Latin star and Oscar winner. Like, that's a good, that director of Top Gun Maverick, that's a good mishmash of people. But what I've realized is, first wipe of the brow for the sweat that's accumulating, I'm by the end of this episode, I'm just going to be sitting in a 1-inch puddle of sweat, but I'll probably lose weight. So that's a good thing. But I think what America has become, I think, with movies is a little bifurcated. And by a little, I mean tremendously. If you're going to do a race car movie, you got to lean all the way in. Like, I remember when I saw the movie Warrior, which was about MMA with Tom Hardy and I forget the other guy's name, but I've seen him in a lot of stuff. And Nick Nolte was in it. I thought that movie was awesome. And it made no money. And you're like, but why? It's like a huge sport now. Because it was real. Because it was a good movie and real. Ron Howard's Rush was about race car driving with Chris Hemsworth coming off of Thor fame and Daniel Brühl, who was nominated for an Oscar for his role in that movie. That movie is amazing. He got nominated for it. Daniel Brühl made no money. Why? Because it was a good movie and realistic. Now, the Fast and the Furious movies, that's the rare case of like, we're going to throw the rainbow of diversity in, but it's going to be so blunt and dumb and big that everybody will just join in. I feel like if you're not going to do big and dumb, then you just have to lean in to sort of like Top Gun Maverick got it right. They were like, it's fighter jets, it's Tom Cruise, and oh, don't worry, Tom Cruise is supported by a bunch of handsome, moderately well-known white people as well. Now, what F1 does wrong is they're like, Well, we've got Brad Pitt, so we've got chicks and we got white guys. They're gonna like this movie. Well, if the white guys don't forget that he helped produce Moonlight and 12 Years a Slave, Brad Pitt, race traitor, more likely. So we're gonna get the guy from Snowfall, which was a popular show among you know who. And you know what? It was, and I guess they didn't show up. Or some of the people you were hoping would come out from the Tom Cruise coalition were like, is this a woke DEI race car movie? Pass. And then Javier Bardem is the CEO. Where? Is it Goya Beans racing cars? If not, then I'll pass. So it's made a good amount of money, but it's almost to me at the low end of what that movie should be making. Like it made like 55 domestic. There's no reason why that shouldn't have been like an 80, $90 million opening, but it wasn't. So, Hollywood, learn your lesson. Okay. If you're going to do white guy stuff, you gotta quadruple down on the white guy-ness. Instead of Javier Bardem, you just get Jeffrey Dean Morgan to be the guy. Basically, similar looking an actor, but white, as far as I know. I don't mean to prejudge Jeffrey Dean Morgan. God knows that my Italian Jewish caramel features have often been mistaken for pure white. And instead of Damson Idris from Snowfall, you get Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad. As I've said before, I've made jokes about this, but if you do a show on TV about white people forced to deal drugs, you win all the Emmys, okay? If you do a show about black or brown people dealing drugs, you get nothing. Doesn't matter how critically acclaimed. I'll give you the three big examples on the white side: Ozark, Breaking Bad, Weeds. On the black and brown side, you got Snowfall, Narcos, one of my favorite shows ever, and I forget, I had one other. Doesn't matter. It didn't win, whatever the show I'm forgetting is. Didn't win anything. So, oh, The Wire, the biggest of them all. The biggest of them all. Didn't win anything, considered one of the two to three greatest shows of the last TV. In the era of TV. So, anyway, I'm rambling. You don't know what I'm referencing. That's okay. By the way, if you want more things that are funny that you don't get, join my Patreon. I do book reviews. I do bonus podcasts. I do where I really vent. I post some videos from shows. Although, if you look at my calendar right now, not sure how many of those we've got left. Job interview tomorrow, by the way. Job interview. And that job interview is gonna really drive. If I get that job, it's really gonna drive a stake through the heart of my dying comedy career. No, JL, but I was just about to get tickets for the first time in your 22-year career as a stand-up comedy. Don't quit now. I know you're right there. You're right there. It's like Sting and tantric sex. You've been teasing me to the point of climax for 22 years, and just when it was about to happen, oh no, in a blink of an eye, half my lifetime doing comedy, it might be over. But the one good news is that I will say is the last time I had a full-time job that I thought was really going to put the squeeze on my comedy career, there was a worldwide pandemic, and I got to work from home a lot. And my comedy career thrived. So, fingers crossed for another cataclysmic human event. But patreon.com/jocovan.com. I do monthly hangouts with the fans. Sometimes those are actually well attended. So I do appreciate that. So it's only $3 a month, but as some of my fans often tell me in YouTube comments and on social media, dude, with all the free stuff out there, it's a pretty big ego to be charging people thing access for things. And I was like, yeah, $3. Sorry. You've shamed me. I'm really ashamed now. Please continue to enjoy the free stuff. So I'm gonna talk transgender folks, and the algorithm dips, and the social media clips fail. And YouTube suppresses the content and yada yada yada, but I'm gonna in the broader scheme of some news going on. But I want to talk a little bit of a focus on Democrats and transgender people. So that was your sunshiny, glorious opening to the episode, and I will be right back after this break. And we're back. Oh, that was a refreshing break. My upstairs neighbors continued to play what I believe is a game of tackle football right above me, while Cookie, once again, I could hear the Savion Glover-esque tap-tap-tapping of her claws as she scrambled for safety, thinking bombs were going off above us. JL, who's Savion Glover? Outside of Gregory Hines, pretty much the only tap dancer that should be anywhere within your memory. You know, there is, much like tall, comedic, monstrous-looking people, there's only one a generation. Fred Gwynn gave way to Brad Garrett, gave way to, we're still waiting for another one, and I thought it would be me, and it's not. Similarly, in tap, you have Gregory Hines. I guess he had, like, Fred Astaire, Gregory Hines, Savion Glover, and I guess tap dance is dead. It's the same way I feel about, like, quasi-fake Jamaican pop stars. It was like we had, like, Shabba Ranks, then we had Shaggy, and then we had Pitbull, and we've been really at a loss ever since. Pitbull has held the crown by default for, like, two decades now, and it'd be nice if Brad Garrett could hand over the tall, monstrous comedian character crown to me, but it seems like it's not going to happen. But guys, I went to law school. Some of you know that. Many of you know that. Somebody will comment, I didn't know that about you. And I'm like, well, clearly you've really not watched a lot of my stuff or looked at my website or anything. But yes, I went to Georgetown Law School. My running gag is top 100% in my class, and that is true. But obviously what the Supreme Court is doing, just a brief note on the Supreme Court, and I wrote this, it was in my drafts, and I didn't want to share it, and I should have. But what the Supreme Court is doing, whether knowingly or unknowingly, and I would obviously lean heavily into the knowingly, given the six-vote majority that they have. And just a word to the wise, everybody, Hillary Clinton wouldn't have appointed Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. Sorry, whatever gripe you have with corporate Democrats who got us into this mess, you sanctimonious, lying to yourself prick. She wouldn't have done that. There'd be some real big issues still safe if Hillary Clinton had been elected president. So congratulations on that one. You showed us. Or not. But what they've done recently in this district court, in this opinion that says district judges can no longer issue blanket nationwide injunctions, is they've opened the power of the presidency wide open. Now, and the thing about this is, and people will cite this, Josh Hawley did it in the Senate at one point. They will point to, look how many injunctions have been issued, nationwide injunctions have been issued for Trump. Look at that. It's like quadruple the second most from any other president. Well, we've never elected a selfish, dumb, ahistorical, constitutionally ignorant wannabe dictator. It's funny how they, and by they, right now we have a sample size of one, Donald Trump, how they pushed the boundaries so far beyond everyone else who was a governor, a lawyer, a scholar. Anybody else in that group? No, that's pretty good. That's a senator, a vice president. Like, we've had a good run since, I'm thinking of somebody right now who wasn't any of those things. That hack, novice General Dwight Eisenhower. He didn't know shit about shit. Okay, so fair enough. So we got to go back 70 years till we get to somebody with, and I would argue, devil's advocate, that maybe Dwight Eisenhower was a man of more principle and character, at least for his times, if not on a pure basis, than Donald J. Trump. I'm just going with Eisenhower over Trump. But it's shocking that they sort of give him the benefit of the doubt. And this is the thing when people say, I love it. I loved it during Trump's first term. People would say, hey, you may not like Trump. Like, I didn't like Obama, but I respect the office. Oh, bravo. What a fucking hero. What a moral example for the children. Okay. Well, what if the guy occupying the office, Donald Trump, doesn't respect the office? Why must I, informed, fairly intelligent, concerned citizen, afford Donald Trump more respect to the job and to his position than he does? He sees it as a place to abuse power, get enemies, and enrich himself. That's it. That's what he's doing. And then, so the Supreme Court sort of like holds its nose, covers its eyes, except for Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas, who love the idea of doing an Eiffel Tower on like, you know, Lady Liberty. They go, well, you know, look at what they, this will apply. I don't know if you can hear that, but I'm going to have to go upstairs. So if you find out on Thursday, they're like, JL is dead. He was murdered by a hostile group of people. It's because I went up there and asked them to please show some courtesy for the first time in a year. Where was I? This is why you can't have a home studio. This is why you can't do it. You know, this is why I have to, this is why you got to join my Patreon so I can afford a large house with a soundproof studio. Okay. It's really your fault, if you think about it, that I'm dealing with these conditions. But where the hell was I? Oh yeah, but they basically, they afford him this like ridiculous, it's happening too much to presidents. And it's like, are you never going to take into account the extremity of Donald Trump? That would, it's literally like saying if Ted Bundy showed up into court in 1980 something, and they were like, and I'm his defense lawyer, and I go, Your Honor, they've charged my client with 32 murders. Like, nobody's ever been convicted of even close to that. So clearly, this is a whole sham. This is absurd. And we've got to throw the cases out because nobody's ever killed that many people. So clearly my client couldn't have done all that. It's a ridiculous charge. That's basically what the Supreme Court is doing with Donald Trump. They're saying you're treating him so unfairly by holding him to the same standard that other presidents have been held to. He appears to be far more unfit and proceeding in far more of an unconstitutional, illegal manner. But that can't be because he's president. So if he's president, it's very much, we're back to the, we laughed at Nixon when he said, well, if you're the president, it's, or whatever he said, if it's not illegal, if you're the president, or if you're the president, it's not illegal. That was like a laugh line. Now that's doctrine. That's constitutional law, basically, in the era of Trump. So I say that to get that sort of out of the way. But what I wanted to talk about a little more specifically, Andrew Sullivan, I thought, wrote, honestly, a very interesting and measured article, op-ed in the New York Times on this topic. I don't know if I agree with him, but I felt like, you know, if this is the level of discourse that we're going to have on this issue, then that's fine. And I think he, like the Supreme Court, he's a gay conservative writer. If you're not familiar with who he is, he's on Bill Maher a lot. But he's sort of one of these folks who's kind of, he believes, and the article, of course, is much more measured and thoughtful than maybe an appearance on Bill Maher, where it's a little more shouty and extreme. But he basically is saying, you know, the gay rights movement made a lot of progress. And, you know, even under this Supreme Court, I think it was a Neil Gorsuch opinion, I'm forgetting the case, but basically said that over the objections of the Alito Thomas wing, that the like Title IX does apply. I think, I'm sorry if I'm messing this up a little, but it was basically workplace discrimination on the basis of gender does apply to transgendered people. Now, I can see an argument where you'd say, no, that was clearly not in the intent of the people writing the law when that in the 60s. But Gorsuch adopted it as such, and now that's the law of the land. which is always weird when I go, and I haven't gotten into the weeds yet constitutionally with this, but I go, but Trump can kick people out of the military for being transgender. But they do have workplace protections, just not, I guess, at the whim of the president. And once again, feel free to comment. I'm not pretending that I'm ironclad on this, but that's just... And can't I be entitled once in a while to the same thing that every American voter goes, which is like, it just doesn't feel right. Now, I know I hold myself to a higher standard, but I'm just going to say it doesn't feel right. But Sullivan makes the case that there was a lot of progress, and that the trans movement has become a sort of radicalized, moving too quickly, moving too extreme movement. Now, like I said, in his writing, it's a very, and I recommend you read it. You don't have to agree with it, but it's like, I've said this in other videos where I go, if the level of discourse begins with trans people are due and entitled to their fundamental rights and privileges of citizens in this country, or people in this country, if they are, you know, not citizens, but lawfully here, etc., then we can discuss legal, like the certain, we can discuss medical treatments, medical procedures, sports, you know, but we can discuss these things and how communities and lawmakers deal with them if we come to this baseline agreement that they are people, that they exist, that they are entitled to all the rights and privileges of citizenship. They are citizens. And then we can, but the sports and gender affirming care issues related to, you know, underage people is, I think, clearly a Trojan horse to just usher in and widen the pathway to bring in just pure hate and discrimination, and to try and sort of effectively eliminate them. I mean, when Donald Trump pushed for ending the position with the suicide, national suicide hotline, like specialized gay and trans sort of coordinators or responders, in my mind, I was going, who's that? How's that protecting kids? How's that fairness? I don't know. It just seems like you'd prefer more of these people die. I think getting rid of trans troops in the military, people who are decorated veterans, I don't know who's that protecting again. It seems like getting rid of trained quality soldiers would be making us less safe and would be a waste of money having invested in them to train them. We're just saying on the, and that's when I say these things on a practical level, because that leaves the only answer as discrimination and hate. And there's a lot of talk, obviously, after the election. You know, Donald Trump ran his Kamala is for they, them, Donald Trump is for you. I still say it's a very good ad, a great ad even. I mean, it played well. But they managed to do nothing but talk about trans kids and trans people obsessively, and then somehow say that Kamala Harris was incessantly talking about trans people. And that was a sort of, you know, a mental jujitsu on the simple-minded that seemed to work. You know, it could be, it's not so much Democrats care too much about trans people and not about other issues. I think the real problem we have with the electorate as it is, I think, is that it was more Democrats care too much about trans people, and it makes me uncomfortable. They make me uncomfortable, so I don't want them. I don't think it's like Democrats are not sitting there going, I know the economy, I know China and Russia and infrastructure and cancer research, but clear my schedule for the next 6 months. I just want to talk about trans issues, okay? That's it. It doesn't work like that, but that's how it's been kind of presented, because I think there is a substantial amount of bigotry and, to be fair, discomfort or confusion, maybe not rising out of hate for some people. But for the MAGA movement and for Trump, I think it is just, it's blatantly disrespect and hate. So what I thought, and then the big question for Democrats was sort of a, Well, we can't center that issue. It's a losing issue. We can't center that issue. And I thought, JL, put on your history major from Williams College hat for a second, even though you didn't study this in college and you really learned mostly about it from books you've read as an adult, Goodwill Hunting style. How you like them apples? JL, what's that from? I don't know. That's a quote from Goodwill Hunting. Okay. Pretty big movie from 28 years ago, starring the late, great Robin Williams and the currently still alive and great Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. I want to talk about the election of 1876, okay, where Rutherford B. Hayes beats some bitch. I don't know. Was it Benjamin Harrison? I forget. Rutherford B. Hayes is the key guy here. And under Ulysses S. Grant, thank you, Ron Chernow, under Ulysses S. Grant, basically federal troops were all up in the South's ass, as they should be, to protect our new batch of citizens, namely ex-slaves. And it required federal troops, you know, to protect them. And with that protection of basic rights, you had black senators, you had black representatives, you had in some states black leadership. And in 1876, the Republicans, let me see if I got this right. I believe Hayes was a Republican, and he said to the Southern Democrats, and I know MAGA's like, see, it was the Democrats all along who did it. Yes, and then in 1964 with the Civil Rights Act, all your Republican buddies became Democrats, and all your Democrat assholes who were racist and the Klan switched parties to the Republican Party. Okay, ask the ghost of Strom Thurmond in hell. Okay, he'll tell you. He'll tell you with his hidden black daughter. Well, she's not in hell with him, but she can tell us as well. Anyway, you know what I'm saying, or maybe you don't. I don't care. Moving on. But you had a compromise that basically there was a deadlock in the presidential election, and basically the Democrats in the South were like, "We'll give you the presidency on one condition: you get these federal troops out of our sovereign land, so we can go back to running things the way we want." Frankly, through murder and terrorism of the N-words. And Republicans were like, so all we've got to do is abandon the blacks and we get the presidency? Signed, sealed, delivered. I'm yours. Why the Northern Republican president sounded like a Southern guy? I think in spirit. That's why I did that. And that led to a little thing called Jim Crow. So I'm sure there were people at the time going, hey, blacks, yeah, it's a big issue, but it's like, we gave them 8 years of protection. We can't lose the White House. Come on, let's go. And what happened was, 90 years of racial terror and oppression. So that's one reason why you don't sell out a group that you're supposed to care about. That's one reason. And then you can go through the time. It happens all the time. Now the example will be black people. And I'm not pretending that the population of trans people in this country is equivalent as a percentage or a number to black people at those times in history. But the New Deal, which set up so many people under FDR for great middle-class lives and to build generational wealth, all that FDR had to do to get it through was say, all right, South, black people won't be able to enjoy most of this. Will you sign on to my deal now? And they're like, yep. Now, in that case, and I hate to say this, I mean, the country is going through a depression, and then you have World War II. But in that case, you sort of go, well, what's FDR supposed to do? Like in that case, that was help more people or lose it all. Whereas in 1876, 1877, that was more of a get power for ourselves or help people. So that was much more of a purely power-driven, selfish point. Whereas the New Deal not happening, even though it was delayed for many people, many black people, some of those benefits, that made a huge difference in the history of wealth and race in this country. It's still FDR making that compromise, I don't think is as bad as it is. The compromise there was, well, we got to do something, and this is something. So you have two different examples of one which is purely power-driven and one which is like, I got to do something. I got to sell somebody out, so let's do it. Now, I know that sounds very harsh, and it's most likely a little oversimplistic, but the question then becomes, what movement are we in now? Because the trans people are a much smaller group, but as you're watching this unfold in real time, it took a matter of weeks to go from no trans troops to no gay suicide hotline helpers, no gay, lesbian, transgender specific assistance on the suicide hotline. So it just starts to expand. And they're already talking about going after gay marriage, which you know Thomas and Alito are down for. So it's already in a matter of 6 months, we're seeing this on like a hyperspeed, social media driven kind of warp speed.
And or
progression or regression from, it's just trans, like you don't have to do the thing of like history books won't have to say, you know, in the course of decades, there was this steady erosion in the rest. No, it was like in the first year of Trump, they went from no trans swimmers to get rid of gay marriage. So the question really isn't one of these, well, do we stand up for them? Yes, you have to make the messaging has to be somehow about, I think what worked for gay marriage was emphasizing sort of a liberty issue. You know, that's how I think Ted Olson, the famous conservative solicitor general, that's how he became one of the two lead lawyers, I think, arguing that case. Obergefell. I sound like Bill Cosby, sorry, doing that like at the dentist. Still makes me laugh. I know he's a monster, but when I was watching the W. Kamau Bell documentary series on Showtime about Cosby for like 3.5 episodes, I was like, God, he's terrible. And then they got to the clips from Bill Cosby himself, and I was like, my God, he was funny. So, but we don't have to sort of make this like, well, what if we can see where Trump is not interested in some arc of history or changing. He's not a conservative movement guy. He's a move fast, get high from all the damage and destruction and tweets and Truth Social posts I get and keep going, keep feeding that high. Donald Trump is not a movement guy. He is a rat in a science experiment that gets like a sugar high every time he taps the hurt people button in the lab. Because oh, my supporters love that. Yeah, great. Oh, yeah, let's do that. Oh, yeah, who do we have to hurt next? I love that. I love all the controversy I'm causing. Oh, yeah. And the high needs to keep getting bigger. So he will not stop. You know, he is the out of control weapon in the, that once was in the hands of movement conservatives and is now a giant civil rights destroying blob that is trying to erase history and take back. He wanted to take back the things that Obama did. They've really worked hard to take back a lot of the things that Lyndon Johnson did. You know, hey, if we give him a third term, maybe he can take back all the things FDR did. And then if that doesn't satisfy him, he'll try to bring back Jim Crow. He is an abyss of hate and insecurity that needs to be filled. And we're watching. He can't be measured. Like you said, he cares nothing for a movement of conservative values or undoing the liberal welfare state or anything or the great society. He just wants revenge and he wants satisfaction and he wants quick highs. And that is a very dangerous person. And he's showing it with this movement. So what I'm saying is when it comes to the lessons we've learned from history, we need to speed those up like time-lapse photography, because Trump will try to do, he will try to do what took 90 years of Jim Crow to do and undo with the Civil Rights Act. He's going to try and get undue rights and privileges and things like that in the matter of months, because he needs to satisfy this empty, addictive abyss of hate that fills him. And So my answer is absolutely not. Should we abandon trans folks? We should be talking about it. And like I said, I thought the Andrew Sullivan article, you know, that's why sometimes reading long form things is better than TV or podcast appearances, because people think those things out. They try to make their arguments. They're not dealing with applause or reactions or hot takes or retweets or things like that. But I just think that history has taught us, and Trump is showing us, that you cannot give an inch. The same way the gun rights people, or the gun rights fanatics, however you view them, they don't give an inch. And if they don't give an inch for guns, why should we give an inch on protecting people and lives and human dignity and Americans? Like, why should we give? And the way this needs to be talked about is very different, maybe, than it's being talked about. But like I said, they use these things, these, whether it's bigotry or confusion or both, as a Trojan horse to usher in hate. And I think the line has to be drawn. It's like, do you believe in the dignity and personhood and rights of these people? Then we can talk about sports, and we can talk about how, you know, I don't even want to venture into the medical procedures, but I see, like I said, the Andrew Sullivan article lays this out pretty compellingly. I see the reason to be measured and thoughtful, and I'm not claiming that doctors and parents aren't, but I don't think being overly cautious in situations like that, and even legislatively, is necessarily an act of hate or bigotry. And I get that something can go wrong either way. But what there needs to be an agreement on is that these people exist. They have rights in this country that need to be protected like they would for anybody else. And until you agree to that, I see, A, no reason to take you as a good faith actor on more marginal entryways into this issue like sports. And as Democrats, or as left of center people, or as patriots, I see no reason to give any ground on this until that concession is made. You know, you want to talk about sports? Fine. Let's write a broad transgender bill, like rights bill or amendment, so that we can discuss these things civilized, where there are honest differences of opinion, but we enshrine and protect the rights of these people as Americans. And then we can talk about those tangential issues that still matter culturally and in day-to-day lives, but not on that fundamental level. But of course they won't, because like so many things, they discovered that transgender issues are their new wedge issue. And when they lost abortion and they lost affirmative action, I mean, they won on those issues. Trump delivered for them. But when they won on those issues, they needed something else to generate fear and hate. And I honestly was a little naive. I didn't think transgender issues were a big enough population to become the new cultural wedge issue. Abortion, affirmative action, that's talking about conception and life and race and education. But I didn't think trans swimmer, that there was such a thirst for hate in that party, in that movement, that could be a sustaining issue for an entire political party and politician. And it seems to be that it was. And yes, you can point to other things, and yes, oh, price of eggs. Right. At this point, do we still have to pretend like it was the price of eggs? We have to pretend. Do I still have to sit here and go, yeah, you know what? It really was the price of eggs. You know, Donald Trump's tariffs, well, they'll ride or die with Trump on anything. He can do whatever he wants. The big, beautiful bill, I'm going to say it right here. And that's basically it for this section of the show. But that's, I don't believe in militantly defending every issue involving trans people, like reflexively. Let's have a discussion on some of these issues. I'm fine with that. But until one side, it's like Democrats have to stop doing this. Fuck that. What about Republicans have to start respecting the basic humanity, dignity, and existence and rights of trans people? Let's start there. then I'll meet you in the discussion area on this topic. But until you, how about you come to me with, I respect basic rights and human dignity, and then I'll join you and say, let's talk about the sports thing. Let's talk about the procedures and therapies for minors. We can talk about that respectfully, I think, because I can see both sides of the issue, whether I agree or not. But I don't see both sides of these people shouldn't exist. And you pretending like that's not core to your party and your president's movement?
Yeah.
And it's a non-starter. And why I think Democrats need to start holding the line. I think J.B. Pritzker has been pretty unequivocal with that. Not making any endorsements, but he seems to have been pretty unequivocal with that. Maybe seizing on Gavin Newsom's kind of like hedging to the middle. But I say the first issue has to be existence and rights and dignity. Then we can talk about those other issues. But until you're willing to admit that and concede that, and allow for that, why should Democrats be going, well, let's find a way to meet their bigotry. Let's meet their bigotry, and then maybe we can find agreement there and like forget it exists and forget the issue entirely. No. And that's why I bring up your history, your little history lessons, because when the bad guys, and Donald Trump is a historical bad guy, a generational talent for evil, worst president, worst person probably to hold the presidency. I don't think that's up for debate in any rational, decent human being's mind. But you give this person, when you give the bad guy an inch in American history, they take 10 feet. When you give the bad guy an inch and it's Donald Trump, somebody who's not even committed, I'll say this. For Jim Crow South, that was a movement. They were committed to to slavery and to racism on a fundamental, deep level. Doesn't make it any better, but it was not just, I like being mean. They thought they did not respect the humanity of Black people. Like my question, the same way I don't think Republicans respect the basic humanity of trans people. That's my point. That's why when you concede this to them and bolstered by the fact that Donald Trump is not only going to take the 10 feet that any bad guy in American history will take when given an inch, it's that he isn't even committed to it on some sort of Christian level or scientific level or deep-seated principle. He feeds off the bigotry. He wants an enemy. He wants victims because he doesn't believe he can have a victory without victims. If he can't win unless there's a loser, that's his view. It's a very zero-sum game. He will keep looking for new victims, new causes to destroy, new histories to unwrite. And you stand the ground now. And better we learn what fucking country we live in, to be honest. Better we learn, oh, no. We are a bigoted country. We are a modern day 1885 because this is what we want. This is what the people in this country choose. But make it clear and hold the line because it's not just about trans people, though it very much is about trans people. It's about who is the next group to go. Because like I said, villains in history, you give them an inch, they take 10 feet. Donald Trump will take 20 feet because on top of just doing what villains do, he needs to feed the abyss inside him more and more. And so this is a you stand your ground. Sorry to use that phrase. Stand your ground now, okay? On the basics, make them concede basic humanity, basic decency, but they won't because they need it as a boogeyman. But at least put them on the record. Put them on the record and say, what do you stand for? Do you believe these people exist? Do you believe they have the right to exist? State what you believe. I will meet you there, and then we can discuss these other issues like civilized people. But that's not what they want. They want the hate. They want the truth, social retruths. They want the chaos, and they want to keep taking and taking. So That's my feeling on it. Hopefully that was clear, but I do recommend you read. And you don't have to agree with everything he wrote, but you know, at least the measured, thoughtful tone of Andrew Sullivan's article, it made a difference. I'm not saying it changed me, but it was like, this is the kind of discourse we need to have. But that's a serious discourse. That's not a real time with Bill Maher or a Twitter discourse. So that's it for today's podcast, except for the comedy part after. So to lighten things up before you leave. So another word from our sponsors, maybe yes, maybe no, but I will be back after this. Hey, everybody, and if you've noticed, it actually got darker in the studio, even though I've been using natural daylight the whole time, because it's about to thunderstorm the fuck out of Bloomfield, New Jersey. So, stroke! What's that, Joe? It's an famous AC/DC song, people. Come on. So now my natural light has been severely diminished with those, like, scary gray-blue cobalt. Is that the right? I don't know what cobalt, I know when I looked up cobalt as a kid, it would say a blue grayish color, but I'm like, a blue grayish color? Dictionary, for colors, you should just include the color. The description of it, because bluish gray can mean a lot of things, okay? But that's why now it's like appearing darker in my studio, because the Lord didn't like my defense of trans people, okay? There it is. The Lord has spoken, everybody. He's decided to darken this studio because of my unchristian-like words. But punchdown of the week, guys. We have a punchdown of the week, and I'm sweating like crazy. But I posted on X, also known as Twitter, a picture. Now, it says, further clarification said it was doctored, but of Kyle Rittenhouse signing his books, and he was looking very portly, just in the face. You know, some people said it was doctored. Maybe it was. There have been more doctored photos. That's why I thought this one was maybe real, because it wasn't so crazy. And I just wrote as my caption to it, which got plenty of likes and some retweets, thick, THIKKK. Get it? KKK. A parody of thick with two C's, which became a thing several years ago. The joke is probably outdated at this point in terms of social media. But, most people got the joke. But then a frequent commenter, nice person. I mean, no ill will, but when you earn the punchdown of the week, you get the punchdown of the week. Okay? This is a podcast of laws, not of men. But she wrote, he's ready for his thick boy summer. And she wrote THICC. And I just thought, no. You kind of said what I'm joking on. Yeah. Like, you kind of took what I said. I'm making a joke on what you said, but you said your thing after I said what I said. I don't expect everybody to understand this, but those of you who do, you understand my frustration, and that's your punchdown of the week. Special review time. It's his fourth special on HBO, and I have not liked the first three. But I said, you know what? Let's give Mr. Gerard Carmichael, they often say in comedy, fourth time's the charm. And, I can tell I have such bad lighting that, like, the video is now, like almost slower as it tries to, like, make up for the lack of light. And I guess I'm not going to get Carvel right after this podcast, damn it, because it looks like the heavens are about to openeth up. But I watched Gerard Carmichael's new HBO special, Don't Be Gay. It's his fourth special, and some of you might be expecting me to trash it and be like, I don't understand how this guy ever became this big time comedian. And he's always just talking. Well, this special is different. Now, word to the wise, it's graphic in times in terms of the sexual content he describes, but it was good. I genuinely thought it was good. It lost all the sort of one man show and the I'm a thinker on stage. It was true to who he has put out as his kind of onstage persona, but a lot more jokes, funny stories. I, for the most part, really enjoyed it. And I'm glad that I could keep an open mind, because you go 0 for 3 on specials with me, I'd be in my right to just be like, I'm good. I don't need to check out his new special, but I know I need content for the podcast. And I said, well, let me watch it. If I hate it, I can make it funny. And if I like it, that'll be surprising to people. But I really did enjoy it. I thought it was very strong, and it feeds my theory that I probably said years ago on a lost episode of Righteous Prick. Like his first special, he was reading notes on stage. It was directed by Spike Lee. That was weird. His next two specials were very serious. I don't think I laughed at all during either of them. And they were both directed by comedic genius Bo Burnham. And that's not sarcasm. I believe that Bo Burnham, Nathan Fielder, and Sacha Baron Cohen might be the last three geniuses, pre-AI, who they will represent potentially the last of good comedy. And that has nothing to do with who's doing comedy now. I just think those are three of the only people I've seen do things that have pushed art and comedy in ways that makes me still kind of happy to be a fan of comedy and hopeful for something else. But this special, it validated my theory on what I said of him like a decade ago, which is like, but why isn't this guy just featuring? Why has he already like jumped from who are you to like superstar of stand-up comedy? And to me, I don't know how long he's been doing it, less than me, I know that, but who knows? Who knows how many years led up to the Love at the Store special? But I think he was kind of a relatively early success. I mean, HBO special, I think he's... It had to have been pretty early in his comedy career, relatively speaking. And now I see a comedian in command of his skills with a good set, a theme to the show, but not a one-man show. Hey, if I only make you laugh four times, that's cool because we're here to think and I'm here to push the boundaries and do new things with the art. No. You gave me a message, you gave me a story, you gave me a theme, and you gave me good stand-up comedy. It just validates my theory that no one other than maybe like an Eddie Murphy is above the process. And it's nice when you can nail it on your fourth HBO special, but to be fair, without being a dick, I really did like it. I thought it was very good. So don't be gay if you can stomach a few stories of, some strong sexual imagery and words. Very good special on streaming on HBO and HBO Max. So I'm losing, like, it's like become night. It is now nighttime in my apartment. So the video product is going to be like grainier and grainier, even though I'm using the same HD camera the whole time. But thank you for listening. I got a new 5-star review, so thank you for that. If you've never given me a review on Spotify or Apple, do it. Subscribe to my YouTube channel. And if so inclined, share the episode, share an episode. If you like an episode with a friend, with a colleague, with somebody who likes comedy or podcast, or if I've articulated something that you think, oh, I wish I could say it like that, or I like the way you said it, whatever your reason, let's try to spread the show. If you don't mind, I'd really appreciate it. And like I said, huge guests next week. So until then, this has been Rain on Your Parade, and I will see you next Thursday.